It's time for Jason Wilde on the Homer Hour on 94.5 ESPN.
Everybody should get information about the Packers from Jason Wilde every day of the year as often as you want. Now that we have WisconsinOnDemand.com, you can just hit the Jason Wilde button and you'll be so smart. And then you can decide whether or not you're going to tell people that you stole it from Jason or you figured it out on your own. That's a whole separate topic. Good evening, Jason.
Good evening, Stephen. How are you?
I'm awesome. How about you?
I'm great and shocked that you asked. Thank you.
All right, the Discount Liquor Twitter poll question. Which part of the Packers team is better, offense or defense?
Should Matt LaFleur be fired? Oh, no, that was after the game on Sunday.
That was like one person, and this is...
That was 9%.
That's right. That's correct. 9%. Thank you, Pebble. We'll address with Jason on that. Is 9% bothersome? But back to the question, because I want to know Jason's opinion on so many Packer questions. But this is the first one. Which team is better, offense or defense?
There was one person out of 11 that voted before it was shut down.
Not post game. We get millions on the post game. Oh, baby, the numbers.
Millions?
Oh, yeah. It's off the chart.
I know you get millions listening. I didn't know you had millions voting.
No, millions listening, correct.
I would say the offense.
Okay, is it close, or explain your reasoning?
It is definitely close. It's close, and look, right now, obviously, coming out of the Bears game, you don't feel great about how the defense played, right? I mean, which is totally reasonable and totally fair, but I think on balance, the defense has played some pretty good football. You know, that 24-14 loss they had against the Lions a couple weeks ago before the bye, the defense only gave up 17. The Lions are hanging 50 points on teams. So, you know, I didn't like the way the defense looked kind of unprepared for the change in the approach with Caleb Williams, but I still think that's a pretty good group. I'm more bullish on the offense because, you know, Jordan Love, we talked to him today about this and I asked him a bunch of questions, hey, that's a good question. From him about how much.
Do you think he actually meant it, or are they told now that if you say that every now and then, people like it?
No, I usually say it to you because I'm buying time. I don't usually mean it, but I think he definitely meant it.
There's nothing you will do as good as that. Pebble, keep that one for future reference. Even if it's a lie, it's a great lie, and if it's true, I don't care.
It's a lie. But look, here's why, and I didn't bring that up. Jordan Love told me I asked a good question. It's because he hadn't really thought about it. Mm-hmm. And my question to him was, in what ways did not being healthy impact the way you were playing? I said, you know, in my unexpert opinion, you just look like yourself again. And I think he agreed with the premise, but he said, I tried to keep my mechanics the same, but, you know, and again, I didn't want to call him a liar for a second straight week. Because of when he said he thought he was practicing and then he realized he'd forgotten that he didn't practice going into the Lions game. But like
I don't think he's a good liar.
He tried. No, he's not. He's a darn honest kid. But what he did when he said that he tried to keep his mechanics the same, that's great that you tried. But I watched the games. Like, you clearly were not stepping into your throws the way you stepped into your throws on Sunday. That affects accuracy, right? There's no doubt about that. He just didn't look like he was as confident of a player as he looked like on Sunday. And so clearly being healthier allows him to certainly run more, right? I mean, he had a season high.
No, I agree with you 100%. He looked a million times different. He looked like himself.
Right.
And in fact, he looked so good that those of you who said he didn't look good, I wanted to say, you know what? They were all right, because the gap between what we saw and what we're seeing now is greater than I realized.
Yeah, and as the doctor, I always get now the professor and the doctor and all this other mumbo jumbo you got going on this show. Blog is still the doctor, right?
Yes.
And Anderson is the professor. But
yes.
He's also 7'2"
Yes,
he's 7'5".
He's 7'2". I just... Some people, I want to take the professor away, and I might. But go ahead.
Well, I don't know if that's, he's lost tenure on the home run.
No, the 7-2.5 is so amazing. I challenge everybody, go back to ESPN Sports Center and look at John Anderson, and the second you look and go, there's no way that guy did 7-2.5. There's not a chance.
That guy jumped over Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yes, no. But anyway, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
So it was Brian this morning that said, now that look, come hell or high water, they have to make sure, and obviously they try to do this every week, but they have to make sure they keep him healthy, because it was just such a stark difference between what we'd seen. Like, you know, him taking up, now he told me today that he probably, if he'd have seen the exact same wide open space that he saw on the 13-yard run, the play before the quarterback sneak for the touchdown, where he just gets smashed by Keith Byard at the pylon. He said, I probably would have still tried to run that even with my left leg being the way it was. And then he had a good line. He said, I don't know how far I would have gotten or how fast I would have gotten there, but I probably would have tried, because that's in kind of your football
DNA. And if I was the coach, I'd tell him that's $5,000 fine. Other than when we get to the playoffs, you don't slide and you create even the smallest possibility of injury, it's going to cost you $5,000. And if that doesn't stop it, next time I'm going to add it to 10. I'm going to move it up to $10,000.
It would definitely be conduct detrimental to the team.
Yes.
If you wanted to view it that way, yes. So my point is that, you know, even if him in his brain was trying to play the same way and was willing to take the same risks, like, the proof is in the pudding. Like, his completion percentage, and I know he only threw 17 passes, but his completion percentage was the highest of the season, 76.5%.
Yeah, his quarterback rating was like 111, even though he threw an interception. That's how good he was.
The second highest passer rating of the season, 113.
Yep.
He had one game where it was 119.5. I think it was maybe Arizona. So, but it, now he did throw an interception. But, again, that's another part of it. Like, I thought he looked more decisive. I thought he was smarter about checking the ball down and not taking unnecessary risks. So not only was he physically better, but I thought mentally and decision-making-wise, he was also a significant amount better. So, I'm not saying that he's not going to have trouble with the 49ers this week. I'm not saying that everything is solved and he's going to be back to being the guy that threw, whatever it was, 18 touchdowns against one pick in the final eight games last season. But he sure as heck looked more like himself this game than he had in the previous games that he'd played after hurting his leg in Brazil.
All right, have you done this? I'd like you to rank the top players on the Packers. Who's the number one player on the Packers? Jordan Love, right?
No, I don't think with the way he's played and with the time he's missed.
Okay, who's number one?
Look, obviously the quarterback is the most
Josh
important.
Josh Jacobs.
But I would say Josh Jacobs.
Okay.
And I would probably say McKinney second.
Okay.
And then I would say Love.
Okay.
Like again, that's not, and I don't want people to misconstrue that. Jordan Love is the most important player. If he plays well, they always have a chance to win. If he struggles, they're in trouble. But because of the time he missed, because of what we just got done talking about in terms of him not really playing like himself, I would probably put those two guys above him. But that is not a permanent location where I would be.
Yeah, but you're right. You have to factor in the play, because otherwise you're ranking a position. And yes, but, you know, the punter could be the best player and no one cares. What?
Right, and he's thrown 11 interceptions. Like,
right.
That's not good.
Yes.
No matter how you slice it.
We haven't discussed, we have the Tim Van Voren scouting bureau, but we haven't discussed the Jason Wilde scouting bureau. Young players that, I don't know how to ask it, rank them, or the young players that have surprised you, because my excitement in the Packers is about all these new guys, and it seems like they're good, even good to where other players, like Van Ness, hasn't gotten and shown that, even though he's been there a little bit longer. So, young players that have impressed you or surprised you.
Yeah, I mean, Jaden Reed has been impressive from the start.
Yep.
And that has, you know, he was obviously a rookie last year, and he's just continued that. He leads them, even though he was a minimal factor against the Bears. He still had a touchdown. He still leads them in receptions.
Why does that happen?
Yards. Well, they only threw the ball 17 times.
Okay.
Like, you throw four checkdowns to your running back. Six of his 13 completions were to either Josh Jacobs or Chris Brooks.
Now you're down
to seven completions to wide receivers. Because Tucker Kraft, I don't think, had a catch. So I think it was Watson 4, Reed 2, Dobbs 1. I think that's all she wrote. So, I mean, that was just a weird game where their defense didn't get them the ball enough and have them.
Right, and if you wanted to run more, the number of touches that Jacobs had, because I always add receiving and rushing in, like 22 touches for 140-some yards. It's like you can't really find any fault with that. That's what you want.
So anyway, to answer your question, I mean, look, let's not forget Tucker Kraft is a second-year guy too. So, you know, he was definitely not like the guy that you're like, oh my gosh, this guy's unbelievable in the first half of last season. And then he took off obviously like a meteor during the second half. And now has been really good this season. I think of the draft picks, you know, I think Javon Bullard has been good, but I think Evan Williams has been almost, I'm almost willing to call him special just because of his knack for being around the ball.
What qualifies and what does special mean?
It means that even if he's not the best, the most talented or most athletic player on the field, he still manages to tilt the field. And I always use this because it's such a simple way to convey respect to a player, even though the wording is so simplistic. It says so much more than the actual words. And that is, and again, I've been comparing him to Micah Hyde from the beginning, but what Micah Hyde, I remember doing when we had our own version of ESPN Wisconsin, when it wasn't folded into the ESPN.com website, I did a story on Micah, all centered around the phrase, that guy's just a football player, which is incredible, incredible praise. If you ask football players, when people say that about them, it means a ton to them. And it, again, it's such a simple phrase, but it says so much more. And I think Evan Williams fits that suit. I mean, look, you could say that about Charles Woodson too, but Charles Woodson is also one of the most supremely talented football players ever. I mean, he's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He's in the College Football Hall of Fame. He's won a Heisman. Evan Williams was not given the same God-given ability that Charles Woodson was. But what he does have is a top-flight work ethic, a really smart brain that allows him to, you know, watch film with some help from Xavier McKinney, who's helped him learn how to do that at the NFL level, that he really digests things. Now, he got walloped on a block in the game against the Bears, but it was another example of, I think it was on the touchdown run by Swift, but he you watch the game and it's just like, he's always around the ball. He's always in a good position. He doesn't always make the play, but he just knows where to be, how to get there and what to do once he gets there. And I think that's, he has the makings of being a really special player.
Yeah. And I think that you're saying like there's nothing he could do or level that he could reach that would really surprise you. You're not predicting it. That's what I said. But you're almost curious to see how good he becomes, right?
Yeah, I mean, I find myself, obviously McKinney being a free agent addition has been great, but you know, they have not had a homegrown top flight safety since Nick Collins suffered his neck injury, right? I mean, in 2011, and that's all, you know, we're going on 15 years ago now. So when I look at him, when I look at Evan Williams, I see a guy that, again, isn't the athlete that Nick was, but certainly has a knack for making plays. And there are a lot of guys that have a lot of talent and a lot of God-given athletic ability, but they just don't have that knack.
What was said today that you would like to pass along by anyone?
So we did ask a series of questions about Jaire Alexander, who did not practice today, You know, obviously I had asked LaFleur on Monday if what happened, you know, him pulling himself out of the game with after 10 snaps, if that affects what approach they might take this week. And LaFleur said on Monday, it absolutely does. So I don't know. The fact that he didn't practice today leads me to believe that whatever is going on inside of his knee, that there's a reason to wonder if he'll play. You know, he was in the locker room today. I was talking to McKinney and to Love when he was there. I haven't quite figured out how I want to ask him, but you know, I'm going to go back and find the quote from last season where he basically said, and I'm paraphrasing, so I don't have it in front of me, that, you know, if he's not 100%, he doesn't feel like he can play. And I just think that that's such a loaded thing to say because...
Well, no, you can't say that.
You know there are a lot of guys that are playing at less than 100%.
Well, no, Brian Bulaga says you're never 100% after the first game.
Right.
I mean...
Right.
Jair, you can't say that. That.
So I want to find the exact quote because I don't want to misquote him and make him look bad unfairly. But I have a pretty good memory, and I feel like he said something, if not exactly that, something like it. And what I want to ask him is, look, is it just so hard for you to play the position you play if you're not like, why did you pull yourself out? Did you feel like a lot of pain in your knee, or did you feel like you were ineffective because of your knee? Because, right, those are two different
things. Yeah, and I got an answer for you that I can tell you, Jason. He got mad at people complaining about his level of play, which he believed was only the result of not being 100%, and he doesn't want to get that heat anymore, so I'm just not playing it, and it's 100%.
I do. I will say this, and I won't say that about Jair without talking to him, but I know for a fact that there, and this is, again, the social media realm we live in and everything else. I know for a fact that there are guys that have that mentality.
Yes.
Like, I'm going to get, if I play at 70% and I play like crap, I'm going to get torched and no one's going to say, hey, this guy shouldn't have even been playing, but he did it for his team. So they're not willing to do it. Other guys who are maybe a little more secure or a little more confident or are a little more adept at finding ways to be effective even when they're not physically up to it, they play anyway. But yeah, I don't want to cast that aspersion at Jair until I've had a chance.
Well, I just want to say to him, ask your teammates when they want you to play and what the standards are. I mean, that answer means I don't give a hoot about anything but a few people, whatever some opinions that some people have, which isn't a deal, it's not an issue. It's an issue to me with his teammates. Hey, if they think, and they know he's hurt and they think he's, they want him out there at I don't know what percentage, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think this is the age old question.
Yeah.
And it's not just at quarterback, but it's at every position. At what point, what percentage does the starter have to be down to before you say we're better off with his backup? Like, I don't know, Carrington Valentine, and again, I don't break down the film as adeptly as Brian Bulaga does because he's forgotten more about football than I know, but it looked to me like Carrington Valentine, I mean, he got blocked on a couple of crucial plays that were not great, but looked to me like he played pretty well, and he's a guy they were really excited about. He's had a bunch of injuries during the first half of the year and during training camp that slowed down his growth. But it looked to me like he went in for Jair, played better than Eric Stokes has this season. And I thought it was really encouraging that he played that way. So maybe if Jair's only 75% and can't be as nearly as effective, maybe a 100% healthy Carrington Valentine is a better option. So again, I respect Jair a ton. We've had a great working relationship over the last seven seasons or whatever he's been here for. So I do not want to be unfair to him. And I always believe that if you're going to write or talk about a negative story, that player, you know, there have been others that have done this job that didn't feel like those players merited the opportunity to have their voice heard. I vehemently disagree with those with people that do that the job that way. I want to talk to him. And if he gets pissed at me, I still want to talk to him because I just think that in fairness to him, I would like to hear his answers to these questions instead of, making any assumptions.
Yep. Thanks, Jason.
All right, Homer. Take care. Be good.